Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Media in the studios of KAKM.
Hello and welcome to Alaska Edition. I'm your host, Zachariah Hughes, and today we're talking about human trafficking in Alaska. The topic tends to be closely associated with sex trafficking and prostitution, but my guests today are part of an effort to expand how Alaskans understand the issue, and we'll be discussing what's being done about it. Mara Kimmel is the First Lady of Anchorage and a lawyer who's worked intensely on immigration issues. Adam Alexander is an assistant district attorney with the State Department of Law's Office of Special Prosecutions and has worked closely with law enforcement on trafficking issues and cases. And Heidi Dragas is the state's commissioner for the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. And Heidi, I just want to start with you and ask whether there's a working definition for trafficking, especially given how broad a scope you guys seem to be bringing to the issue.
Well, we do have a working definition. I think Adam probably could field that a little bit better, but basically it's force, fraud, or coercion. As I think a lot of the public may not be aware, this January is Human Trafficking Awareness Month, and I think it's pretty easy for us to identify sort of, sex trafficking. And, I shouldn't say easy to identify, but it's something that I think people are more familiar with, the idea of what sex trafficking is. But there's such, it's so much more pervasive than just that. I mean, we see human trafficking when it comes to forestry services, when they're doing timber contracts, in restaurants, construction sites. There's a whole host of assisted living facilities. We have a current case involving that right now. It's pervasive, and it's something that, the three of us and our respective agencies, with the state Department of Labor, with the Municipality of Anchorage, and all the associated agencies and nonprofits, we really want the public to be much more aware of the face of human trafficking, which includes sex trafficking, and the signs, so that we can do a better job of combating it here in our community.
And I want to get back to that specifically, some of the industry and statewide dimension. But before that, Mara, can you tell me a little bit about what the effort underway is right now as far as the task force that was convened this last fall?
Sure. So just as a moment of history, in 2000, the federal government passed the Trafficking Victims Protection Act. And it wasn't until sometime in the early 2010s that the state of Alaska also passed an anti-trafficking statutory framework, which Adam can speak to. And in 2012, Governor Parnell and his wife, Sandy Parnell, convened a trafficking task force that came out with a report in 2013, and then it kind of languished on the shelves. And so after Ethan was elected, Commissioner Dragas came to Ethan and said, let's pick this back up.
And that's Ethan Berkowitz, mayor of Anchorage.
Yes, came to Ethan and the municipality and said, let's pick this back up. And so the wonderfully opportunistic things that present itself from the city and the state working together is that the city can look at some of the gaps that exist. There are gaps, there are differences between the federal law and the state law. And so that leaves out some issues that need to be addressed. There's also gaps that we're finding in regulatory frameworks. Heidi mentioned the assisted living homes. So we're looking at where licensing and regulatory frameworks can be enhanced, and that's something that the city can do. But the overall purposes of creating this working group fall right on the heels of picking up the work of the 2012 task force, with the goals of increasing awareness about human trafficking and decreasing the incidence of human trafficking.
And have you guys adapted most of those recommendations and just kind of started trying to put them into practice? Or are you starting over and kind of seeing what worked from those recommendations and building something different?
We are seeing what worked from those recommendations and then we're enhancing them. So one of the things that wasn't included, which seems to be something that I think we all can agree that needs to happen, is reducing the incidence of human trafficking. So that's been a big push, and part of that again is at the city level to identify the gaps in law and the remedies that are available to victims of trafficking and to try to get people out of that industry, and at the state level to work with the Department of Labor again to identify labor trafficking just alongside sex trafficking.
And Adam, how do lawyers, the Department of Law, and law enforcement, how do they work with advocates and social service providers kind of routinely? Because it seems like it's a fairly wide spectrum of different agencies that become involved in these cases?
That's a really good question. And what we found through our experience investigating and prosecuting different types of offenses, specifically sexual abuse of minor cases and sexual assault cases, is that the most effective law enforcement model for investigating and prosecuting those cases and providing services is what's called the multidisciplinary approach. That's a collaborative approach. And in the instance of a sexual assault or reported sexual assault, we have in Anchorage now, and this is really a pioneering model nationwide and as well as across Alaska, is we have what's called a multidisciplinary center. And that's a co-located facility where we have Office of Children's Services, law enforcement, medical care providers all working together. So when somebody comes in to report a case of sexual assault or child sexual abuse, all those service providers, or at least some of the service providers, as well as law enforcement and other state agencies, are co-located in the same facility and can all work collaboratively to investigate, not only investigate the crime, but also provide services as appropriate. And that's why the Mayor's Task Force is so exciting, is because it gives us all the opportunity for not only service providers and other members of the community, but also all the many state agencies that have an interest in dealing with these types of offenses and the problem more generally to work together. Because a lot of times those of us in state government will sometimes be on our own little island and not necessarily aware of what other folks are doing. And that's one of the really valuable things that's coming out of this initiative.
Well, and I remember from an early meeting from the task force that FBI was present, Federal Department of Labor, I could be botching that agency name by an acronym or two, But I am curious, when you say this is a pioneering model, is it working nationally? Is it working here, or is it too new to know?
Well, so the model that I was describing with the multidisciplinary approach, the multidisciplinary centers, and a kind of increased collaboration between agencies and service providers, that's something that we have seen be extremely effective in the context of sexual assault, sexual abuse. And it's one of the things, I think, generally speaking, that we're all striving together to achieve in the field of human trafficking, both in the sense of labor trafficking and sex trafficking.
And Heidi, let me ask about that. I mean, on a labor perspective, what other industries is trafficking a serious issue in? You mentioned timber, but I'm just curious where else in our state this.
You know, we illicit massage parlors, I think, is a simple one. Strip clubs is another one. Like I said, in agricultural areas, like timber. We're starting to see a higher incidence in assisted living homes. We have an incident right now where it's alleged that there's an individual working in an assisted living home who is provided housing in exchange for working. She's not being paid for work, but she at least has a place for her and her son to stay. Those are the really difficult types of situations that we're facing, where you know what opportunities you provide somewhere, what resources does someone have when they're housing their child and they're at least they have a roof over their head, but they don't have the access to resources to do something about it, to say, hey, I'm not being paid for this work. Because if she's not being paid, then she doesn't have a roof, or if she says something about it, she doesn't have a roof over her head. So they're really, really challenging circumstances for us, and that's why we're partnering with these other agencies. We're not only using law enforcement, but regulatory enforcement, as well as bringing together some of our nonprofit agencies here in Anchorage. But we're also working to broaden that scope statewide. To try to deal with this, because they're multi-dimensional situational issues that we're dealing with, the problems, the circumstances that victims of human trafficking find themselves in.
Well, and is it a statewide issue, or is it something that's really localized in Anchorage? Mary, you're shaking your head.
Yeah, it is definitely a statewide issue. And I think Anchorage is a great place to launch this collaborative multidisciplinary team approach, because because one of the other aspects of human trafficking is this notion of mobility. It also makes it extraordinarily complicated to prosecute and to find victims, because it's like whack-a-mole, right? You get somebody in one industry or in one assisted mm-hmm. living home or what have you, and they move the people who are being trafficked to another state or another part of Alaska. So it is really important to understand and to have those networks, both geographically but also across different agencies. But it is definitely something. I've seen trafficking victims from Valdez out to the Aleutian Islands in the north, in Anchorage, so all over the state.
And what role does immigration play in the issue?
Well, immigration actually plays a huge role. First of all, it was the impetus behind the passage of the 2000 statutory framework. So I think initially, under federal law, there was an awareness that immigrants and non-citizens are particularly vulnerable to being trafficked. What has happened since 2000, though, is as we are getting increasingly familiar with the dynamics of trafficking, we're beginning to recognize that we also have domestic trafficking victims. And so the statutes have been amended to reflect that as well. With non-citizen victims of human trafficking, in one weird sense, it's almost easier to pull those folks out of trafficking situations because there are immigration visas and remedies available to people who've been brought into the United States under false pretenses. And so we're more able to get them to help and to get them remedies that would hopefully inspire them to come out of the situations that Heidi described. It's also something that we are acutely aware of, though, when working with foreign-born trafficking victims, that there may be people back home who are being threatened by the traffickers, because human trafficking is an aspect of organized crime. It's the third largest, human trafficking is the third largest profit trafficking, I'm not saying that right, but after drugs and weapons mm-hmm. is trafficking in humans around the world. And so it's an extraordinarily profitable thing. There are connections all over the world. And so a lot of the victims that I've come across who are foreign born are very concerned about their family and friends back home.
Well, and let me ask you, Adam, since you've been involved in prosecuting some of the cases, where does the money go for a lot of these networks? Is it staying in state and going back to the bush, or staying here in Anchorage, or going abroad?
That's a really, again, an interesting issue in question. And both the commissioner and the first lady also raised interesting points that I want to touch on as a preface. One of the significant characteristics of a trafficking enterprise or operation is the fact that the trafficker or the exploiter will try to make their victims feel complicit in the overall enterprise. And so whether that's in the case of a labor trafficking dynamic or in the case of a sex trafficking dynamic, oftentimes the exploiter will try to insulate themselves from criminal liability by kind of putting their victims out there as their first line of defense against a law enforcement investigation. So these are very complicated and resource-intensive investigations. The money aspect is significant, and the commissioner has touched on one area. Our state's Medicaid Fraud Control Unit is working very aggressively for these types of cases because we see a huge amount of Medicaid fraud on the part of labor traffickers who are exploiting personal care assistants, who are working sometimes in unregulated facilities to care for patients and for residents, and that money is not going either to the resident as it should be or to the person who's doing the work, but to a larger criminal enterprise. And we've recently had sentencings here in Anchorage on large-scale cases where people are sometimes taking in hundreds of thousands of dollars a week, even in Medicaid recipient funds, and that's not going to where it should be going, but rather to fund a larger criminal enterprise. And we have seen that money disappear both out of state and overseas.
One thing I do want to ask you specifically about is that the Department of Law, I've seen you attached to cases that have dealt with not human trafficking as it's maybe commonly understood, but more illegal media items and pornography that circulated. And I'm curious why, for the Department of Law, that's still a trafficking issue.
So I work for the Department of Law has an office called the Office of Special Prosecutions, and we're statewide prosecutors that work in specialized areas. So for example, our environmental crimes prosecutor works with us in the Office of Special Prosecutions. Our Medicaid Fraud Control Unit, which I just referenced, is also a part of the Office of Special Prosecutions. Kind of my caseload has been child sexual exploitation and trafficking issues. So I work statewide, and there is sometimes an intersection between those two areas.
Heidi, I want to pull up a slide that we have that shows the number of cases that were kind of brought forward, and that's from the Human Trafficking Resource Center. And it says that of the 11 cases that were brought forward, only one had to do with labor in this last year. So I'm just curious why this is a Department of Labor issue for you guys.
Well, the statistics are hard to tell because I know Mara is aware of this, and so is Adam. It's so much more difficult to identify labor trafficking. I think something that people don't may not be aware of, but we actually have a higher incidence of human slavery right now than we've ever had in the history of our country. And it's because that the face of slavery has changed. Labor trafficking is much more difficult to identify. I think the markers for sex trafficking are simply easier to understand and to see if somebody is going to be reporting sex trafficking. Labor trafficking is something that's just more difficult to understand. I mean, we have labor trafficking victims who are involved in forestry clear-cutting work in Southeast that are not being paid for the work that were brought here often into this country under false pretenses. We have incidences in the construction industry where folks that are the construction workers are sleeping in sleeping bags on the floor in a facility that they're working on because they don't have housing and they're not getting paid for it. We have numerous incidences of this, but it's much more difficult to identify what labor trafficking is. But there are some markers. And a lot of it, I think, and I might leave it to Adam and to Mara to identify those markers more, but a lot of it is really a gut sense. And I've mentioned this before. You know it when you see it. We had a victim of labor trafficking, of human trafficking, at a restaurant in town. And it was a young man. And there was, I think he was, I want to say maybe 14 or 15. And there was a patron in the restaurant that noticed something was wrong about the way that this young man was working around the restaurant. And it turned out that he'd been working 20-hour days, that he had been wearing a diaper because he wasn't allowed restroom breaks. It was something that patron saw that said, something's amiss, something's wrong here. And that's the type of information, that's the type of citizen initiative that we need at the Department of Labor, that the Department of Law needs, that the municipality needs in order to combat labor trafficking. So I actually think that there's a much higher incidence of labor trafficking in our state than there is sex trafficking. And I think it's because it's so highly underreported.
Well, I want to get to that data in just a second, but I do want to ask, do you guys have the staff or the manpower or the resources to be able to effectively kind of gain access to places where there's not, you know, regulators?
Well, that is, that's a great question. And
I
think most of us, and I will tell you, it's very difficult. When you're in the budget situation that the state is in right now, our resources are pretty strapped. We are doing the best we can with less, and so it's becoming increasingly difficult to staff those positions that we absolutely need to protect the public and to protect workers. Do we have the adequate resources? I would say no, but we're doing the best we can with what we have. But it's one of the critical reasons why we need the public to be involved in this with us.
And
a couple of points, just based on what Heidi said. The first is I think that the necessity to share resources and to maximize the efficient deployment of the few people that we do have is really important, which is another great reason that we're collaborating with the state, that the city's collaborating with the state. You had asked the question of whether the Department of Labor had the resources to go enforce regulations. Well, in some cases, we don't have appropriate regulations. And so again, that's a huge gap that we're trying to fill. And then the other thing I just wanted to mention is, alongside what Heidi said in terms of we don't necessarily recognize labor trafficking and what some of the signs are, I think that's true with service providers as well. I think there's been tremendous movement since 2000, when, again, we first started this whole effort to combat human trafficking. There's been a tremendous educational effort as far as sex trafficking goes. What has been lacking is a commensurate effort as far as labor trafficking. And so I realize that we've been stressing that aspect of human trafficking here today so far, and that's actually one of the big impetuses behind creating this working group, is so that we begin to see labor trafficking right alongside sex trafficking. And I do agree, based on anecdotal experience that I've had as an attorney and that an agency that I work very closely with has, who represent trafficking victims, there's a much greater percentage of labor trafficking going on than there is sex trafficking, although that does not minimize at all the fact that there is plenty of both going on in our state.
And why, I'm just curious, you know, is Alaska exceptional in the, you know, data is hard to come by, but exceptional for its labor profile? I just have to think it's harder to get here than many other places. It's also expensive. So I'm curious what drives Alaska and Anchorage's, you know, trafficking market. I don't know if that's the right term.
Well, I think people are always surprised. I experience this a lot as an immigration attorney. People are always surprised at how many immigration issues there are in our state. And I think proportionally, it's probably pretty similar to anywhere else. We just have a smaller population, so our raw numbers might be smaller, but I don't think that we're immune from the negative impacts of a lot of the criminal behavior that's going on globally. I think that maybe some people think it's far and remote and therefore far away from law enforcement, which is not the case. I mean, we've got great law enforcement out there, as Adam's described, trying to really identify these issues.
Well, Adam, I want to ask you a question about the difficulty in trying these cases and what it takes to build. And before we do that, I want to put up another card. It's from the same group, the National Trafficking Resource Center. They say they got about 34 calls or indications of possible trafficking last year out of Alaska. I have to think that's underreported. And then I'm also curious how difficult it is to turn preliminary call or a, you know, a request for investigation into a case that moves forward to trial.
I think it's hard for people sometimes to understand the amount of resources that go into not only an investigation, but then a successful criminal prosecution of any criminal enterprise. These are particularly challenging for a variety of reasons. Both in the labor and in the sex trafficking context, you're dealing with exploited individuals who may feel that they themselves have done something wrong, who may themselves be suspicious of law enforcement, perhaps for a good reason, and not inclined to cooperate. So it requires a lot of work on the part of some of our best law enforcement agents and investigators and officers statewide to just at the very first, at the outset, have the capability to investigate these types of cases, to have the support from their leadership to investigate these types of cases, and then the ability and the training and the experience to build a rapport with somebody who might not be initially inclined to cooperate, who might feel like they have something to hide or feel ashamed or feel like that they are putting other people at risk by cooperating with the investigation. And that's all before you can even develop enough information to even potentially charge somebody. And then our criminal justice system works well, but it doesn't always work quickly. So you may, even after you've put hundreds or thousands of hours into investigating and developing a case on the part of multiple agencies and multiple agents, you then have the challenge of trying to keep track of folks who may be your witnesses, who may not want to stay in the state, may want to travel overseas. Obviously, with the budget situation, I'm not at the commissioner level, so I can't comment on that. But I will say that it is a challenge, right? Because it requires money in order to fly witnesses from place to place and to have your case together for trial. And then you have the challenge of putting it on at the end of the day. But that's only at the very end of a process that can oftentimes take years. And things change, people change, dynamics change, and that's a fluid process as you move through it. But it all begins at the very outset with people who have the awareness and the training to recognize these issues, and then the willingness, the support, and the resources to investigate them. And that's something that we're doing our best to achieve.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to highlight something. I mean, he's entirely right, and I really want to just throw accolades his way. Because what's been happening is recently as, you know, 16 years ago with the Crazy Horse case, where INS was driving by the Crazy Horse Saloon and they saw on the marquee Russian dancers, and they went in and they arrested the Russian dancers. And we're beginning deportation proceedings and criminal prosecutions against these women. And it took a lot of education on the part of advocates to talk to law enforcement about the dynamic. And now, fast forward 16 years later, and we've got law enforcement now advocating for the rights of these victims and understanding the dynamics that are at play with these victims. We've made tremendous strides.
Without disagreeing with that, I do just want to push back a little bit, because I've heard the criticism raised that since the change in Alaska's trafficking laws in 2012, mm-hmm. or changing definition of trafficking, that that law change hasn't really benefited victims or survivors, people willfully or unwillfully, against their will, brought into the sex industry. And I'm curious whether you give those criticisms weight, that it still is biased and tilts against against survivors instead of going after traffickers or going after Johns.
In the few months that we've had the working group together, I have been nothing short of absolutely impressed with the State Department of Law in terms of their willingness to recognize that we don't want to necessarily go after the frontline folks. Adam has brought up Medicaid fraud, and also with prostitution and sex trafficking, we're no longer viewing the people who are out on the street or on the front lines as perpetrators of criminal behavior. We're willing to take a deeper look. So I would argue that people are getting much more educated and we're having much more effective opportunities for really good victim-centered law enforcement, multidisciplinary approaches where we can work together to get people the help that they need.
And last question to you, Heidi, really quickly, because we are short on time. What's next for the task force and for Department of Labor's involvement in trafficking?
Well, we're going to be continued to be involved. I think the task force has met several times. We'll have another meeting, I think, in the near future, and continue the work that the 2012-2013 task force started for us and continue to combat this this horrible crime that's being perpetrated throughout our community.
All right. Well, that is all the time that we have here on Alaska Edition. Thank you to all three of my guests for joining me, and thank you for joining us as well.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.